Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Sends one up for grabs on a bounce. Settled. Fox. The cross is low. Shot. Wow. Mushevich got a piece. Corner, U.S.
What a save.
Learn that name, Mucevic. That was the goalie for Sweden playing the Sweden women's team in the World Cup, playing against the USA women's team in the quarterfinal, actually, round of 16, the first elimination round. That was at 52 minutes into the match. Tremendous save from Lindsay. So then you had at 88 minutes, most of this game was a game of nothing much happening, except that the U.S. had far more shots on goal and corners, many more opportunities. Around the 88-minute mark,
Fox puts one up. Off a block. Not a doubt. Lynn Williams. The cross. It's there. Save on Mucevic.
Again.
Once again, she comes up huge.
Alex Morgan with a huge header, but Mucevic was right there to save it. So that was two very good chances by the U.S. Then into extra time, as there was no score, 0-0 between Sweden and USA. Into overtime, extra time.
Morgan on the chase. Morgan with a pickup. Took the shot again. It's Mucevic.
You hear the thing?
U.S.
Their goaltender was superhuman at the 100-minute mark.
Here's Sonnet. Smith. Williams makes the run. Williams into the box. Shot taken. Save, big rebound. Horan picks it up. The shot is blocked as well. Corner, U.S.
So that was two shots on goal in the space of 5 seconds, and both of them got blocked. In the end, you had the end of regulation with 11 saves by Mucevic, only one by Alyssa Nair, the American goaltender. So you had a 0-0 tie going into penalty kicks. And 9-3 advantage in corners. So the U.S., by all rights, should have had a score in this game, should have been winning. There was no reason for it not to be, but it just wasn't the case, largely because Mucevic was unbelievable. So they go into penalty kicks. Nobody likes to see a game resolved by penalty kicks. Fans like it because there's drama and tension, but if you like regular soccer, you hate to see it decided this way. First penalty kick, USA is going to go first, Sweden is going to go second, and the pairing, you play 10. Okay, so if everybody scores every chance, it'd be 5-5. If anybody's ahead after 10, that side wins. If they're tied after 10, then you go to sudden death pairings. So if one side scores and the other doesn't, that's the end of the game after that. So the first penalty kick is Andy Sullivan for the U.S.
Sullivan steps up.
She goes
Andy
left.
1-0 U.S.
Mucevic doesn't touch it. Sweden gets up. Fridolina Rolfo down 0-1.
Can she score here against Alyssa Nair? On the whistle, Rodolfo. Rolfo steps up and scores.
She scores to 1-1. The right. 1-1 USA. Lindsay Horan, the leading scorer, or second leading scorer in the U.S. this year. Only with 5 goals in regulation, by the way. Crazy low performance by the USA team.
Walks up. Goal for Horan.
Lindsay Horan to the left. She scores. Sweden. Ellen Rubinson trying to tie it.
Rubinson versus Nair. A chance to tie it up. 2-2.
She scores to the left. So far, neither goaltender has even touched the ball, which is the way it typically goes, right? In regulation time, you rarely score, and in penalty kicks, you rarely don't score. Misses are a big deal. You're expected to score. Christina Mewis gets up there. They're up there 2-2, so this is the 5th penalty kick for the U.S.
Mewis up the left foot, goal!
Mucevic dives the wrong way, so easy score for her.
3-2.
Natalie Bjorn trying to tie it.
Bjorn versus Nair. Missed.
misses the goal entirely. The USA is up 3-2 at this point. All they've got to do is keep putting them in, and they will win this round of 16 game. Megan Rapinoe, famous player for the U.S. She'd come in late during the game. Her and her purple hair came in to be that big foot that she's always used for the corner kicks and things because she's got that amazing foot. She's had times in the past where she's advanced the U.S. by winning in penalty kicks. She's super reliable. Up 3-2.
Rapinoe right foots it over the bar.
Misses the goal entirely. Shoots it up into the right over the top of the crossbar. Nobody can believe it. 100% reliable most all of the time, and she completely whiffs. Sweden, a chance to come back even. Rebecca Blomqvist against Alyssa Nair.
Versus Nair. First save on penalties. Nair was strong.
Unbelievable. Nair guesses right, saves it, blocks it. So USA is still up 3-2. All they've got to do is make this and they win. Sophia Smith.
Fifth one. She can win it. Sophia Smith. This is Vucevic.
He dives left.
Missed it.
Two in a row. USA misses the goal entirely. Sweden can tie it and stay alive. Hannah Bennison.
Bennison. Goal.
Right up the middle. Listen, there had to have left.
From a 20-year-old. It's 3-3.
Okay, 3-3 USA. They've got to, well, I mean, they don't have to get this, but it would help, you know, to not be down and give a chance to Sweden to win. Oh, this is after this. Okay, so we've got, it's 3-3. You've gone your 10. Now it's sudden death, right? Alyssa Nair, who is the goalkeeper, is going to kick for the U.S. Against Vucevic.
Nair shot, goal!
Right down the middle. Easy peasy.
Alyssa Nair!
Sweden now, Magdalena Eriksson. Down, she has to get this or Sweden's out.
Sweden need to score again. Eriksson versus Nair. The game on the line. Eriksson. Goal.
Scores upper right. Back to being tied 4-4. Kelly O'Hara, a late substitution into the game. She's here on penalty kicks. Again, this is the sudden death time.
It's 4-4. O'Hara off the post.
That sound.
Sweden can win on this kick.
Bopping sound was the ball hitting the right post and bouncing off. That so USA is now not down, but the Sweden has a chance to score. So if Sweden can score on this goal, they win after all of this drama. Nina Hurdic.
If she scores, Sweden wins. The U.S. is out. If not, another round of penalties. Hurtig.
Another block.
Waiting on a signal.
And a second chance block as the ball went straight up and down on the goal line.
You've got to be kidding.
And it looks like Alyssa Nair punched it out.
They're waiting.
So she got a block, her second one, and the punch out. Ruled not a score.
I couldn't tell from here.
They're watching the replay. The judges have a digital system just like in tennis to figure out where the ball was. Sweden wins.
Sweden wins.
On the digital analysis, the ball was completely past the goal line, which it has to be. By rule, the ball has to completely pass the goal line, and it was past the goal line by maybe the width of a pencil. Maybe. I mean, you can't even see a gap when you look at the picture of it, but it's some fraction of an inch that it crosses the goal line, then USA loses at that point. It was an amazing. She had blocked twice in penalty kicks and almost got the punch out on that one to have prevented them from getting the score. So USA is out. First time in years that has happened. Lowest scoring USA team in, I think, ever for the women. And heartbreaking for USA fans. And there you go. That's all there is to it. 4-3-7-16-20. I don't get into women's soccer as much, and the USA team has underperformed expectations this year by every account. But man, what a horrible, horrible way for the defending two-time champions to be eliminated from the World Cup. 519 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. I'm Andrew McKay.
I'm getting vaccinated with Prevnar 20.
So am I, because I'm at risk for pneumococcal pneumonia.
If you're 19 or older with chronic conditions like asthma, diabetes, COPD, or heart disease, or are 65 or older, you are at increased risk for pneumococcal pneumonia. Ask your doctor or pharmacist about Prevnar 20, pneumococcal 20-valent conjugate vaccine. It can help protect you against pneumococcal pneumonia in just one dose. Even if you've already been vaccinated with other pneumonia vaccines, Prevnar 20 may help provide added protection. Prevnar 20 is approved for adults to help prevent infections from 20 strains of the bacteria that cause pneumococcal pneumonia. Continued approval may depend on a supportive study. Don't get Prevnar 20 if you've had a severe allergic reaction to the vaccine or its ingredients. Adults with weakened immune systems may have a lower response to the vaccine. Side effects include pain and swelling at the injection site, fatigue, headache, muscle, and joint pain. For full prescribing information, please call 1-855-213-2138 or visit Prevnar20.com.
Hi, this is Earl Ron. At New South Window, we bring the factory to you. Our windows and doors are made with quality in mind, and your products and installation are backed by our lifetime warranty. That's because New South Window knows the importance of single-source accountability. We believe in removing the middleman so you get more for your money. This is real factory direct. One company, one call, guaranteed for life. Get New South proud.
For a limited time only, when you buy more, you can save more. Visit NewSouthWindow.com to learn more.
Join Keith and Pam, your insurance experts with Verus Health Partners, today at 9 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Learn how to save money on your healthcare costs. Find the right insurance products that best fits the needs for you and your family as you head towards retirement or are looking for options now. They will be taking your calls and questions today at 9 with Verus Health Partners on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Do you want to stay up to date on the latest news, weather, and traffic updates, but don't always have time to listen to the radio? Well, now you can get text alerts from the News Radio Pensacola app.
I don't care who you are, that's funny right there.
Good morning, 522 News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable, brutal hot again today. You know, 97, 96, something like that for a high, 113, 114 for the feels like temperature, the heat index number. I lived in Phoenix. I'm just telling you, it's awful out there. It is awful. Well, and so the thing is, like, it is different. Humidity is different than dry. And, you know, dry is less awful, but 114 is still 114. And the one thing that I can say two things. Number one is when I lived in Phoenix, every summer I hated the existence of the city more and more. I was angry at them for allowing it to happen, to live in a place that was that kind of hot, because it's just, it makes you just not want to live. It makes you just want to lay down on the pavement and let the forces of nature take over. I'm just telling you, that's how it feels to live in that kind of heat all the time. Now, Florida is awful in the summer when it's hot and humid like this. You don't want to go outside. You don't want to, you know, you don't really want to do anything outside at all. You know, you step outside for a second, you're like, ugh. But I will tell you, I have never yet in 9 years of living here in Florida, I've never had that same sort of just want to give up on life kind of feeling that you get living in Phoenix. So yeah, it's bad. Okay. But I don't think that the cumulative effect of the destroy your will to live that the heat in Phoenix causes, I've never experienced anything like that here. The other thing I will say is, though, in Florida, what you do get, what's the bad thing, is that feeling like the air is just hard to breathe, you know, because it's so heavy, like your lungs, your diaphragm are having to do so much more work to make the air move in and out of your body. That's a real thing, because the air is, you know, dense and hot and horrible and terrible for you. But, you know, that, I don't know, it's just that living inside of an oven feel that you get when it's 115 for 2 months straight is, ugh, it's, or just 110 even for 2 months straight. It's all, and 6 months of plus 100. And it never goes below 100.
There's a meme. It's a grocery store in Phoenix. Yeah. And it has a, you know how they have the regular cakes that are just out? You can go buy at a grocery store and say happy birthday. Mm. This one said, I'm sorry for what I said when it was 109 outside. the apology.
Nice. We used to write, my wife and I used to write a Christmas letter, which was actually funny. You know how most Christmas letters are really like, really? And the one line, as I recall it, was something along, you know, because our first year in Phoenix, we're like, yeah, so we go out and try to dodge between the exploding cockroaches on the sidewalk. You know, like that's the kind of heat that it is when it's that bad. David Wayne in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
A federal judge giving former President Trump until this afternoon to respond to special counsel Jack Smith's motion for a protective order. Smith filed that motion last Friday after Trump posted on Truth Social, quote, "If you go after me, I'm coming after you." Three people have died after two firefighting helicopters collided mid-air in Riverside County, California. That crash happened last night about 7:30 p.m. The three people who died were division chief, a fire captain, and a contract pilot. And one of the two helicopters that was able to land safely, the other one went down, and that's where all three of those people were killed. And Elon Musk says his X social media platform will pay legal bills for people that have been treated unfairly by their employers for posting or liking something that on the X site. He made that pledge over the weekend, but he didn't give any details on how they could apply to get that money to pay their legal fees.
Yeah, it's a really interesting offer because, you know, what he's saying is, look, you're free to post anything you want here. We're not going to censor you the way they did under the, you know, the former administration at Twitter. And, you know, the Biden administration, which was heavily involved in active censoring, requesting of censorship and getting it. Well, that's what the Twitter files are all about. He's saying we're not going to allow that kind of thing to happen. In fact, if you post something here using our free speech rules and you get fired because of it and can show it, we'll protect you. We'll defend you. We'll pay for your legal costs. You know, we'll help you get your job back, which is interesting because there's already been one offer of it, basically. But the woman involved said that it was more complicated than that. So we don't know the disposition. But here's my thought is Twitter is not making a lot of money these days. Twitter's suffering, right?
No, not at all. Yeah.
How are they going to pay for this? It's what you would call an unsatisfied expense, you know, like when the state passes something that forces the county to pay, right, an unfunded mandate. This is an unfunded mandate by Elon Musk, and so you kind of wonder, well, how many legal fees cases can they take on, you know, and still be what, losing money even so? I don't know. So interesting branding coming as well as the now we've got more details about the cage match of the never.
It has to happen.
It's going to be the most boring fight you ever watch. It's going to be like two kids in middle school after school. I mean, it's going to be like just dumb. It's not any, but yeah. So apparently they're going to actually fight and it's going to stream. And then the proceeds are, what do you say the proceeds were going to go to? I forget now. It's some charitable thing. It's not even going to go to them, which is, yeah, we're going to do a thing. We're not even going to make money off it. So way to go. 527 on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. What else do we have going on? You remember when James Caulkins made the commissioner in Santa Rosa County made the comments about how the Democrat Party is the most wicked party ever? And
yes,
you know,
I do.
Yeah, and anybody who is a part of it, their problem too. And he would never vote for a Democrat to be on a board. And I criticized him quite a bit for all of that. And then people came up the following week and criticized him for being un-American, and which is appropriate for that. And then apparently about 20 people actually filed ethics complaints against him for it. Now the closest you could get to an ethics complaint here would be sort of a conduct unbecoming, behavior that is not compatible with the position and the decency of being a commissioner. You might argue some kind of, weird bigotry bias that would prevent him from putting competent people on boards. Maybe. I mean, it's hard to figure it out because I didn't think it was an ethics complaint. I didn't think there was anything in his behavior that would run him afoul of anything that would get him out of office for that reason. So about 20 of those complaints were filed. PNG had a good story about this. And all 20, I mean, they basically said, yeah, there's no cause of action here, which is true. I mean, there is no cause of action. The cause of anger, cause of frustration. But as the, the Ethics Commission basically said is, there's free speech, though, right? County commissioners saying doofus things Even un-American things, which I believe his comments were, you know, very un-American. The idea that, you know, you if somebody's of a different political party, therefore they're, you know, what they're representing is evil. You know, that's, I find that completely contrary to the spirit of this country. But he says, you know, it's fine. You know, there's nothing in there to justify a charge or action against him. And there was actually a pretty good quote about this from the commission. The complaint does not detail any corrupt acts that occurred through any act or omission in a public position. The act of a politician utilizing allegedly inflammatory partisan rhetoric might be unbecoming to some, but the complaint does not demonstrate in a factual, non-conclusory manner that Calkins gained a benefit from these alleged acts, which would, you know, either conduct unbecoming, that kind of concept, or else, you know, personal benefit from, and he didn't do that either. So failure to constitute a legally sufficient complaint is the dismissal, which is actually what you want. You know, you want people to have wide-ranging free speech, and then you want the Ethics Commission to say there's not a charge, and then voters make their decision whether that's the person they want representing them in the future. What do you have coming up, David?
Four teenagers arrested last week in the anti-Semitic vandalisms. We've got reaction.
Fox News, I'm CJ Papa. Donald Trump's legal team has a 5 p.m. deadline to respond to the feds' request for a protective order in his third indictment. Meanwhile, the former president wants the judge in the case to recuse herself.
Trump says he wants Obama-appointed Judge Tanya Chutkan off the January 6th case, writing yesterday, "There is no way I can get a fair trial with this judge assigned to the ridiculous freedom of speech, fair elections case. Everybody knows this, and so does she."
Fox's Alexandria Hoff. At least three people are dead when two firefighting helicopters crashed midair while battling a brush fire in Riverside County, California, Sunday night. Secretary of State Antony Blinken delivers remarks today at the 25th commemoration of the 1998 embassy bombings anniversary. That's when 200 people were killed nearly simultaneously in truck bomb explosions at the U.S. Embassy in Dar es Salaam, Tanzania, and the U.S. Embassy in Nairobi, Kenya. America is listening to Fox News.
Good morning. It's 5:31 at News Radio 92.3. Get ready for another hot day. Very hot. Already, as a matter of fact, triple-digit heat index here at 5:31 this morning. It's 83 right now in Pensacola. And we'll get more with your Channel 3 weather forecast in just a couple of minutes as well. Four teenagers were arrested last week for the string of anti-Semitic vandalisms around our community, and we're starting now to hear some reaction from community members.
It's so unfortunate an incident like this would happen in Pensacola. You hear about it happening in different places around the United States, but this is such a close community.
And that is Dan Hackton. He talked with Channel 3. He's a congregation member at Temple Batal, one of the synagogues that had a brick shatter their window last week, and the teens were arrested late on Friday. PPD says 17-year-old Waylon Fowler, 15-year-old Wyatt Fowler, 16-year-old Nicholas Ferry, and 18-year-old Kessler Ferry now all face hate crime charges related to that incident. Well, the body of a missing swimmer in Orange Beach was found in Perdido Pass on Sunday. That swimmer was a 26-year-old man who apparently disappeared into the waters in Orange Beach on Saturday evening. Another beachgoer attempted to rescue the man but wasn't able to, and that Good Samaritan was able to get safely back to shore unharmed as well. A multi-agency search didn't turn up any results looking for the man's body overnight on Saturday, but the man's body was found early on Sunday morning. Well, three people were hurt in a shooting in Miami-Dade County. Police say during an intersection takeover on Sunday morning, there was a fight. Somebody started shooting. The victims so far have not been identified. Police say they're a 20-year-old man, 20-year-old woman, and a 19-year-old man, and two of the three in stable condition. Well, the week off to a good start for SpaceX. The company launched a Falcon 9 from Cape Canaveral last night. Liftoff was reported at 9:41. That rocket carrying 22 more Starlink satellites to help spread high-speed internet. And it is 5:34 at News Radio 92.3. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 weather forecast.
This is meteorologist Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center. We're going to be seeing a very hot day today. Temperatures warming up near 97 degrees, feeling much warmer. Excessive heat warning in effect for today. Be safe in the heat. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 81 degrees. For Tuesday, 50% chance of rain, but still getting quite warm with a high near 96. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 80 degrees. Stay connected to the Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. And right now it is 83 degrees in Pensacola. Again, already at a 100 degree heat index this morning. 85 in Gulf Breeze and 83 in Milton. Your next news at 6, breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
It's that time of year again, hurricane season. News Radio 92.3 provides informative, local, and dependable coverage to make sure you're informed of any major storms coming to our area. Before a storm, we keep you informed of the storm's track, where food and gas shortages occur, and where you can get sandbags. During the storm, we stay on the air to let you know where the storm is headed, where power outages occur, road closures, and other storm warnings. Then after the storm, we get you the information to help you recover from the storm and help your neighbors. News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable hurricane headquarters.
As a small business owner, what keeps you up at night? Just knowing if your email got hacked or your phone system went down, it could cost you thousands in revenue, as well as your reputation. That's where Data Revolution comes in, with their unique position to take care of you and your business IT support, phone systems, cybersecurity, and more. Secure it and sleep better at night by going to datarevs.com. Winner of the 2021 Best of the Bay for IT support, datarevs.com.
Hi, this is Todd Thompson, President and CEO of the Greater Pensacola Chamber of Commerce. Tune in to the Pensacola Expert Panel for the Chamber Connection Show that will keep you informed on what's going on with your Chamber of Commerce. Tune in at 10 to find out about our upcoming events, all of our different programs, and what's happening with our local business community. It's the Chamber Connection Show every other Monday at 10 on the Pensacola Expert Panel.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
News Radio Pensacola. He's on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. News Radio Pensacola. Informative, local, dependable.
I'm not content to be with you in the daytime. Girl, I want to be with you all of the time.
Like sands through the Blackwater, so are the days of our Milton. And now, another episode of City Council Melodrama Theater.
The solicitation should be issued for a period of 30 days. I believe that an aggressive search would consume an additional 90 for the first phase, which would get the city to an interview with candidates that you would have identified in conjunction with the firm that ultimately is retained.
Randy Jorgensen there, the city manager, explaining the basics of the process of trying to find a suitable replacement for him when he retires at the beginning of next month. And, a process that already went wrong one time. It's kind of amazing. All of the other things you might say is they got $3,000 was the total price for Buzz Eddy, who did an amazing piece of work putting together the candidate slate that they had. And then, of course, the story of how that all went completely sideways. So they're going to hire basically headhunters now. And you would think that everybody on council would have learned the basic lesson, which was don't screw this up again. How did it get screwed up the first time? Well, because of an imaginary conspiracy that was going on by some secret cabal of employees at the city hall to get Ed Spears into the job, which did not exist, for which there is no evidence, on the basis of which they took drastic action to basically thwart a conspiracy that didn't exist. And in the process, so scared Scott Collins off that they lost him entirely from the job and took actions to undermine the actual process of just plain negotiating the contract. So Mike Cusack, my read, okay, Mike Cusack completely screwed this up for the city, in addition to several of the citizens who contacted Scott Collins. And so, you know, all the problems started from having a council member designated to work with Alex Andrade on negotiating the contract. They didn't have to do that. They shouldn't have done that. It was a completely innocuous proposal by Jeff Snow. Hey, let's have Mike Cusack help out with this. Everybody was feeling good and kumbaya when they 8-0 voted to pick Scott Collins. And then he immediately set in to screw it up through a lot of things that I now know based on text messages and call logs and things like that. And has also violated the Sunshine Law. Maybe more on that later. But yeah, I have evidence of that as well. Not just suspicion, but actual evidence. Anyway, so you would have thought that Marilyn Farrow and Mike Cusack, who are the two on the 6-2 votes, okay, all the time, they would have realized, oh man, we don't want to do this again. No, apparently not. Marilyn Farrow?
This seems like a little bit of deja vu.
It does.
It's on page 75, item number 7, where it indicates that the city attorney will review the negotiated contract prior to submittal to city council for approval. So I would add that the city attorney and Councilman Cusack review the negotiated contract.
You've got to be kidding. She wants to do it again. So this isn't even like before it was the Alex Andrade was going to be negotiating the contract. Okay. With Scott Collins, with whoever the candidate was. This isn't even that. This is just like looking over the agreement with the search firm. The search firm is actually the one that's going to do the negotiating. But still, she wants to insert deal breaker extraordinaire Mike Cusack into this process and give him the ability to goof it up again. Like, did you not learn the first time?
In the past, the last time we were hiring, the attorney handled the job without a liaison from
exactly.
this council, and I suggest the council go back to that, is my opinion.
And not go through this mistake again, so of course Mike Cusack has to jump in.
Personal experience, when I've been recruited by headhunters for positions, I negotiated with the actual company. The search firm just gave me the parameters of the salary range, right, and the benefits, right?
Yeah.
But I personally negotiated with the actual company doing the hiring. So
it is a little different to have the search firm do the negotiation rather than the hiring entity, the city. Even if you decide that you need to have somebody from the city council sit in on this, you definitely don't make it Mike Cusack. You have to pick somebody else. And you definitely can't make it Marilyn Farrow because she was part of the problem too. Not nearly as much, but a part of it.
I'm not quite sure if we should rely totally on the search firm for negotiating the contract. You know, I don't have to be on it. That's fine. Or Marilyn may be more qualified for that than I am. I don't know.
I love that he says that. He doesn't have to be on it. That's the number one goal here.
You know what I'm saying? It just seems odd to me that the search firm would be the sole negotiator with the candidate without input from at least somebody in the council. Because the council does the hiring, correct?
It's presented to us, so we would have input once it's presented to us to where we don't like it or there's some discrepancies that we as a council don't like, we send it back.
And as Gavin Hawthorne is rightly saying, look, this can't happen without us. We get to say no if we don't like how the deal has gone. We do get to negotiate in a way, so stop your worrying.
I would like to make a motion that we add a councilman or councilwoman to that process. Whether it's Councilman Cusack or myself, to review the contract with the city attorney.
Or literally anybody else. I mean, if you have to add someone, if you don't need to add somebody, let it be someone else. Casey Powell?
There's no need for a liaison off here.
Correct.
We've done a hire before. We've done numerous hires. It's not necessary. It's an extra step that could be not productive. So I have faith in our attorney to do his job properly, and I will be voting no on this.
What an understatement. Could be unproductive to have somebody else involved. Roxanne Meese is a little bit more blunt.
Are there any other comments
confusing.
Before you vote?
Yeah. I think it would be too confusing. That's what happened this last time, I think, is there was way too much confusion.
That's right.
I think it'd be cleaner to do it the other way, and I'm voting no.
Too many cooks in the kitchen, and one of them really screwed everything up. Heather Lindsay asks for the vote. And again, what I say, Marilyn Farrow and Mike Cusack are always the two on the 6-2 votes, right?
Right.
Okay, the motion failed. The two who voted in favor are Councilman Farrow and Councilman Cusack, and the other members have voted no to that edit.
So thank goodness. And this wasn't even a substantial thing. This is just kind of to look over the original parameters of the search firm. This wasn't even like the negotiation, the final contract, and all that stuff. So thank goodness. But that's only the mild drama. That's like low-grade drama for Milton, okay? The real drama in Milton is that on Friday, you had Ed Spears, who is the director of economic development, has officially lodged a very comprehensive complaint against Don Molinaro, the city clerk, for a hostile work environment, among other things. And this is, I mean, the thing that he wrote, giving you the narrative history of how they went from having a very good working relationship to her actively sabotaging his efforts to become the city manager and saying some really unjustified and inflammatory things about him to other people, including Scott Collins and to, you know, the public, like to me and to other reporters over the course of time, and other things as well. I mean, this is like 10 pages of single space complaint outlining all kinds of things, including allegations that she was working against the new PIO because the new PIO had come into the office and had to take leave time right away, that she took, basically, she did records requests for people without following city procedures for the records requests, going into Ed Spears' office and taking things out of the file cabinet and then sending them out to folks. First of all, when Ed Spears is the steward of those records, and while he was not there and not going through him, not charging any fee, which is standard for the city to charge fees for certain kinds of records requests, and then failing to redact personal information like bank accounts and social security numbers on those records requests, failing to maintain another public record of a kind of a hit piece that Pam Mitchell, the leader of the Pitchfork Posse, had apparently, we're not too sure because nobody seems to have kept the public record, had brought in. I mean, there's all kinds of stuff in this complaint. And then Alex Andrade, of course, who is the city. Remember last week when Randy Jorgensen said, there's a substantial complaint about the clerk, when they had the special called meeting to figure out whether the clerk ought to keep her job or not. Okay. And he said in that meeting, there's other complaints. Well, we know from what Ed Spears wrote that it's not just his complaint, but there is apparently also a complaint about who I think would be covered by the union, which is the PIO has filed a complaint also. We don't know anything else about that. Okay. I don't know anything else about that. There's HIPAA stuff apparently involved in that because assuming it's connected to her medical leave. Okay. All of that would be protected. But that's a second complaint. Weirdnesses of this include the fact that the lawyer for the union is the same lawyer that Don Molinaro hired to represent her in the whistleblower complaint, the alleged whistleblower complaint that she's got against the city. So, yeah, this is, I mean, you know, just when you think they can't outdrama themselves more. But this is real concerns, right? This is stuff that Alex wrote this 16-page sort of summary for the city council. It was disseminated to them on Friday, Alex Andrade. And in that, you have, I mean, all kinds of things that he says justify firing her. I'll just read you the summary in the end. A review of her own words showed that Ms. Molinaro understood the actions she was taking were beyond the scope of her role as city clerk and understood that she was engaging in activity that would result in termination of her employment. In her email to Scott Collins on July 6th, she stated, quote, I am most likely going to lose my job, but I have to admit I don't care at this point. In her email to Randy Jorgensen, Heather Lindsay on July 19th, she stated, quote, if the council wants to fire me for being ethical, so be it. That just shows their true colors. In her email to Ken Garner, he's a reporter, on July 20th, she stated, quote, I do know at this point that I have overstepped my boundaries as clerk, but my ethics come before my career. He says, given Ms. Molinaro's apparent lack of remorse or understanding the harm she's caused to her co-workers in the city, it's my belief that Mr. Spears is reasonably likely to continue to experience a hostile work environment created by the actions of Ms. Molinaro. Ms. Molinaro does not appear to believe that she did anything wrong. Ms. Molinaro has indicated that by defaming her co-worker, two council members and a sitting commissioner, remember, she was alleging conspiracy, she was alleging corruption. She made a complaint about Ed Spears' wife, for goodness sakes. I mean, it's anyway, she was simply serving as, quote, God's hands and feet. This was in her writing, in Don Molinaro's writing. And she considers the defamatory content of her statements to be speaking impeccably when, this quote, speaking impeccably when others around her appear to lie as if it's commonplace and acceptable. Based on her conduct and correspondence, my belief that Ms. Molinaro will not hesitate to escalate her activity. This poses a risk to city employees' morale as well as liability for defamation claims, violation of privacy claims, and violation of Florida public records laws. It is concerning that Ms. Molinaro believes defaming the city, members of the council, her co-workers, and a co-worker's wife was anointed and ordained by God. The arbitrary way Ms. Molinaro circumvented the city's public records policy is to facilitate political activity of specific individuals with whom she is publicly perceived to be politically aligned is also a source of concern. Heather Lindsay and the members of the Save Blackwater River, which is a political group, they were getting blind carbon copy versions of the emails that she was sending to other people. Who, if you're the city clerk, why are you sending BCCs anyway? And you're sending them out specifically to this group of people to alert them of things. They're getting public records requests filled before anybody else. They're getting them fulfilled, like, voluntarily by the clerk rather than having to ask for them, it looked like. And they're getting all kinds. Remember the special called meeting, the first one that was canceled about Alex Andrade? The Save Blackwater people are the ones who told the press, who then asked Alex for his reaction, who said, "I didn't even know anything about this." So the city clerk is sending emails to them before even members of the administration. Conclusion, the allegations made by Mr. Spears in his complaint appear to be credible overall and are supported by significant documentation and primary source information. To inoculate the city from further liability, protect and repair the city's reputation, protect city employees and future from future harm, my recommendation, city council, terminate Ms. Molinaro's employment with the city immediately. So, well, remember they had a meeting about this last week in the vote. This time was 4-4 with the tiebreaker cast by Heather Lindsay, but they didn't know any of this at the time. And they didn't know anything about the second, and perhaps there are others, but the second complaint that's yet to come, because that's an investigation that has, basically the union has to decide whether to run that investigation or what to do with it before Alex Andrade can get involved as a city attorney, because it's a union condition rather than a, you know, a manager's position. So tomorrow night's a meeting. You know, we'll see what happens. 437-1620, 437-1620. Oh, and by the way, just as a sort of a side note, you remember how, you may not, because you may not be following this as closely as we are, but that's okay. That's why I'm here. Mike Cusack has repeatedly claimed that he did not initiate contact with Scott Collins, that he did not call him, that Scott Collins called him instead. Well, well, here, actually, I think I have a clip that I pulled up handy for this. Here we go. This was him at the July 31st special meeting about Don Molinaro.
I do know that Mike Cusack took it upon himself to contact Mr. Collins. That's after Roxanne being advised Meese. That we were not to do so.
That is incorrect statement, ma'am.
You said it last time. You said you...
He contacted me, ma'am. I did not contact him. He called me, period. I did not reach out to him whatsoever before or after all of this was going on, period.
Well, we need call to listen to the tape him. Because that's what you said last time.
Okay, so part of the complaint or the investigation, the assessment by Alex Andrade includes the cell phone logs of Mike Cusack's personal cell phone that I've been asking for a week and a half, something like that. And the call logs show that he did, in fact, initiate a phone call with Mr. Collins at 4:35 on July 13th. Mr. Collins then returned that call at 6:05 on July 13th, and they talked for 44 minutes. And Councilman Cusack initiated a second phone call at 6:03 on July 15th, to which there was no callback response. And there's a number of text messages back and forth, the public record of which we only have about two-thirds, and we don't have all of them. So he is lying about the call record. He has not provided the call record to people like me who have been asking for it. That would be both a sunshine violation and a lie. And as I've said before, people who lie about one thing, right? 5:52 on News Radio 92.3. So again, tomorrow night's meeting ought to be interesting. And that is your daily update. It seems like it's almost daily of what is going on in the otherwise great city of Milton. It is a great city. It just is suffering from some very ungreat leaders at the moment, and some great leaders at the moment, frankly, and some other very ungreat leaders. 5:53 on News Radio 92.3. I'm Andrew McKay.
Let's get to the points. MasterCard reward points from Pinair Credit Union. Open a new account today and you can earn 20,000 free reward points in the first 90 days. Use those points for travel, merchandise, even cash back. And with no hidden fees and no balance transfer fees, Pinair's reward MasterCard fits you perfectly. Get started online at pinair.org/creditcards.
subject to credit approval. Terms and conditions may apply. Offer available on new accounts only. See website for details.
Summer season is here, and Florida summers can really be hot. But despite the warm temperatures, your garden can still produce some beautiful flowers and delicious vegetables. Get all of your garden tips from me, Mike Wiggins, on The Garden Line, heard on the Pensacola Expert Panel every Tuesday from 9 till 10, and an encore hour Saturday from 9 till 10 on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
The Garden Line is presented by Barnes Feed Store, Pensacola Hardware, and Blue Sky Landscaping.
Are you ready to kickstart your career or make a change in your current career? George Stone Technical College offers short-term, hands-on programs that equip you with industry-recognized certifications in fields that offer jobs right here in Pensacola or abroad. George Stone Technical College offers 25 different career programs and can provide you with a career in a year. George Stone offers financial aid and has grant opportunities for all students right now. To learn about all the programs, costs, and schedules, visit georgestonecollege.edu.
Don't wait until it's too late. Tune in to News Radio Pensacola for the latest hurricane coverage on News Radio 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620.
Oh, 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 oh!
Good morning, 5:55 News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Beware the heat and the heat index today. Again, another brutal one. Oh, my God. 110s plus. I like Joseph Neubauer last night on Channel 3. He's like, you know, the number doesn't really matter. Just don't go outside.
Right? I mean, that's, you know, yesterday.
That's where we're at.
That's right.
All right. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Well, officials in Alaska's capital city are issuing emergency declarations there. They say there's major flooding from a glacier lake outburst that's being fueled by ice melt from the Mendenhall Glacier located north of Juneau. I'm not exactly sure how you say
Juneau.
Juneau?
Yeah.
Okay. That's let's see. I've never been to Alaska, by the way.
Me either. Want to go.
It's beautiful there.
It's supposed to be fantastic cruising up there.
Multiple structures, including two homes, apparently have been destroyed in that flooding. And a Republican congressman now threatening to defund the Department of Justice and Department of Homeland Security. He was on Fox News on Sunday. Chip Roy from Texas says he does not intend to take money away from the agencies, but he also said he doesn't want to give them a blank check until President Biden tells Congress how he plans to restore the DOJ and secure the border. And apparently the Barbie movie is still doing quite well at the box office. Greta Gerwig's film based on the iconic doll brought in another $53 million at the box office over the weekend.
A billion. It's at a billion now.
It's a lot.
It's amazing.
Have you guys seen it yet?
I haven't. I haven't either. The only time I ever go to the theaters, typically, except for I watch Maverick at the theater and all the Star Wars movies.
Oh, okay.
I almost never go to the theater. I was tempted to go with my son. He went to watch Oppenheimer on Friday.
And what did he say?
Oh, he said it was fantastic. Yeah. So, which I would, Christopher Nolan in IMAX, I mean, you know.
No.
I mean, but David, thanks so much for the update. 5:57 on News Radio 92.3. What else do we have? Oh, you, David has talked about this, and of course the news broke on Friday that they have arrested four teenagers, three minors and one non-minor in connection with the swastika spray painting incidents and the brick throwing incidents here in Pensacola. I asked Mike Wood if there was any evidence, any other than the crimes themselves, right? Other than the swastikas being spray painted in the brick and all this stuff, if there was any other evidence of them being motivated by, you know, white supremacy, racism, Nazi ideation or anything like that. Because, again, I still have my theory about this that it might well be, okay, some racist kids. I mean, it might well be that are, you know, anti-Jewish, you typically call anti-Semitic. It might also be just punk kids thinking for some reason this is cool, this is interesting, this will make me famous. It did in the wrong way. But, you know, what I'm looking for is there any other evidence, you know, flags in their rooms, reading materials, you know, participation in online forums, you know, other stuff that would show the racism, anti-Semitism, white supremacy, or anything like that. And my answer was, you know, I asked, is there anything like that that we've learned yet? And, you know, the answer was nothing that they're able to disclose. The investigation is ongoing. So at this point, we don't really know, but they did name them on Friday. Again, a 17-year-old, a 15-year-old, a 16-year-old, and an 18-year-old. And there's varying levels of charges here, counts of felony criminal mischief, which have been enhanced to a hate crime in several cases. There's one person only charged with a single count of felony criminal mischief, which has also been enhanced to a hate crime. 8 reported incidents, and so we'll see. You know, I'm looking for more information before I jump to any conclusions. Regardless of motivations, the effect of creating this kind of graffiti or that kind of, you know, throwing the brick to the window of the Jewish Center, whatever, that kind of stuff, it creates a climate of perception that there's, oh, here we go again. This is what we've seen before, oppression and racism and all that. So whether they intended that or not, you know, you might call it a sort of acts of terrorism, regardless of whether it was really motivated.
Listen on air at 92.3.